basically, the way I like to explain this, I heard it from one of my mentors and friends, a guy named Frank Perkins, who recently spoke at my mastermind for my coaching program. He said, you have two brains. One is the higher brain, the upper brain, the brain that tells you what you should be doing and knows what you need to do. And then there's the lower brain, which is the brain that wants to pursue immediate gratification and distraction and is like prone to like in the moment, you know, pleasure, if you will. Yep. And the higher brain is the one that sets these goals. So at the beginning of the week, I take 15 minutes or so just to sit.
This is Sandy Summer with episode 15 of Neurodivergent Selling. You just heard from Ian Koniec. Ian is truly an inspiring guest. That's who we have today with us. He's the founder and CEO of Koniec Sales Coaching, Inc., with over 19 years of experience in B2B technology sales, and he has sold over $100 million in his career and has consistently ranked as a top performer. He's also the dean of Pavilion's Enterprise Schools Sales School and a former number one enterprise AE at Salesforce. Ian's mission is to help sales professionals perform to their full potential, both in sales and life, without sacrificing their personal time, families, or health. Get ready to learn from a master of mindset, habits, and selling skills. Welcome, Ian.
All right, Ian, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Good, Sandy. Good to see you.
Good. So, you know, I first, I guess, learned about you over a year ago. And at that point, I'm not sure you had started your coaching business yet, but you were, I remember seeing a post when you talked about your story and how you had managed ADHD so effectively that you had turned lots of challenges into superpowers. How did that start? What was the process for that?
Well, it started, I started my coaching business about 4 years ago. So okay. I pursued it full time 2 years ago.
Okay.
And by that time, I had been off ADHD medication for about a year. So it originally started with me to take a step back. I had a long history with addiction.
Right.
And I had abused sex, drugs, alcohol, Adderall, you name it. I've done it. And when I had a near-death experience in 2019, I realized that, you know, my life had been pretty self-absorbed. I was very focused on my own pursuits, my own pleasures, my own head. It was all about me all the time. And having that near-death experience, it kind of woke me up to this idea that my life had been very self-serving, and that if I were to have died in that moment, it would have been a life that was wasted in many accounts because I had been very selfish. And that was a very powerful realization that led me to start my coaching business back in 2019. So that was kind of while I was still at Salesforce. And then 2020 came, and basically I'd been coaching for about a year. And I can't tell you exactly why, but I believe that, you know, God was at the core of it, where I started to feel a deep moral, I would say, conflict internally, where I was coaching others, yet I was still hiding in my own addiction. And at that point, I opened up to my wife in February of 2020 about some of the stuff I had been doing in our marriage and just in private with regards to, I'll just say, my addictions. And that's what brought me into recovery. That was in February of 2020. And okay. So at that point, I stopped getting drunk, stopped smoking pot, stopped viewing pornography and any compulsive sexual behavior that I was doing. I really just kind of became a Christian and I'd say turned my life around and was blessed to be able to give up a lot of these vices that, you know, with God's help and with help from others in my recovery program, I was able to walk away from that lifestyle completely. And I'd already been very successful in business, but hadn't had that success in my personal life with my own integrity. So that was kind of step one of my journey to get off medication entirely. But I started with, I'd say, the more harmful medications.
Right.
3 or 4 months later in July, I remember I was still taking Adderall at the time. And what I realized is that I had been taking Adderall not as a way to like help me improve my focus, but rather as a way for me to get through the day. And it became this crutch where I didn't want to show up to work. I didn't want to do these things. And if I took the Adderall, I could numb myself out so that I basically could get through all the crap I didn't want to do. That's pretty much it. Well, I'd done so much work in my own personal recovery that I was very self-aware, and I realized that Adderall was yet another addiction that I needed to give up because I was using it for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. And I impulsively just one day took my prescription and I poured it all down the toilet, flushed it down the toilet. That was in July, about 4 months after I, first became sober. And I haven't looked back. That was almost 3 years ago now. And that began this journey of, I would say, really investing in myself, specifically around spiritual practices, operating routines, mindset, and most importantly, habits that could create structure that would help me be able to thrive with ADHD without needing medication. And that's been a big part of the content and the big part of the program that I teach and certainly help a lot of people that are struggling in that area to adopt some of the practices that I was able to adopt in my journey. So I know that's a long-winded answer, but it really did start, I would say, before I got rid of the Adderall. It started with just awareness that this was something that I was dependent on for the wrong reasons.
Well, it seems that self-awareness created a real opportunity for you to serve people in the way that you wanted to and allowed you to be real present for the service you were providing to your folks you're coaching. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and I think my family too. I mean, you use the word presence, and I think that captures it. I was not as present when I was on Adderall. I was robotic in the desire to be productive. And my wife could sense it. She knew when I was on Adderall because she said I was snappy. I was irritable. I tried to manage her and get her to do stuff. I was impatient. I wasn't as present. And I guess I've been on a journey to find presence over the past 3 years. And I would say that's very, very accurate. It wasn't just my coaching clients. It was more my family that prompted me to stop because my wife didn't like how I acted and engaged with her when I was on Adderall.
Well, I was never on Adderall. I was on Wellbutrin, and I stopped taking it fairly like 6 months ago. But I felt better. But I was manic sometimes from Wellbutrin and snappy, not very patient. I could focus pretty well, but I felt like I was on a railroad track that I couldn't get off of sometimes. And I felt like I wasn't managing myself. The drug was managing me. And I just recently switched, like within the last week, to Qelbree, and it's I don't know exactly how it works, but it works a lot better for me. It limits the uptake of some natural amphetamine, I think, that our bodies produce. My focus is I don't think I've ever had better focus. I feel like everything's slowed down now, and well, I'm going to continue to monitor it and see how it works because I've been, like I said, the last 6 months, but I got laid off recently with Rightbound, which was not a surprise. I mean, we kind of saw it coming, and I've got other stuff I'm working on, but my confidence had suffered tremendously because, I've always I've interviewed well, and I've always been able to find something pretty quickly if I've needed to, and I've just been getting ghosted, like 5 interviews to 2 different companies and never heard from them again, things like that. And I try not to get too high when I set 7 meetings in a day. And when I don't set any, don't beat myself up. But it's not, you can't always do that. I'm not always successful in that regard, which I'd like to work on further. But are most of your clients neurodivergent?
I wouldn't say most of them are. I think everyone's got something, right? It's like the word neurodivergent. Everyone has something. I tend to, for some reason or another, attract a pretty intensive mostly male client base that mm-hmm. tend to beat themselves up pretty hard and go pretty hard. And, you know, that type, there tends to be addiction mm-hmm. in a addictive personalities, whether it's addicted to work or addicted to success or addicted to potentially maybe a certain lifestyle mm-hmm. going big. That tends to be pretty common. The ADHD thing, I think, is not as common with all my clients, but there's certainly some that I've worked with on. But, you know, in reality, I think everyone's got something, right? And especially now, in terms of the way our brains are changing as a society because of cell phones and because of apps and because of social media and so many other factors, there's a much greater tendency now for people to pursue immediate gratification. And people are generally very addicted to their phones and can't focus as right. well. And it's because their brains are getting a dopamine spike constantly. Yeah. And when you require anything that requires deep focus or what I call deep work, which right. is the need to sit down and really think, whether it's creating content or creating a proposal, anything that you're creating in general, preparing for a QBR, anything where you're creating versus responding or reacting is going to be deeper work. And I feel like as a society, because of some of these factors that I mentioned, people are in general struggling to focus more than I've ever seen. And I'm seeing that with more and more clients. I don't know if they would be considered ADHD per se, like the hyperactivity component, I don't necessarily see, but certainly the lack of focus, the difficulty with just getting basic things done throughout the day. I feel like we are more and more, because of the pursuit of immediate gratification and the dopamine spikes and the mini spikes that we're getting throughout the day, it's harder and harder for people to sit down and focus for long periods of time. And I'm grateful and very, very fortunate that I've put in the work to really understand how to do some of these things, because if I didn't have the tools, and if I didn't have the systems, I too would be victim, because I see that right. myself. I see the desire to pick up my phone. I see the desire to go on LinkedIn or go to the immediate thing. But right. because it's all tooling, Sandy. It's all tooling and systems and routines and structures that create a guardrail that enable you to be able to maintain focus and to be able to start in the first place. Right. Versus just being prone to distractions and immediate gratification.
Getting started, I think, is key for me, because once I can get the flywheel rolling, then I can usually get into a groove that I can continue with. One thing that's helped me also is the Pomodoro technique. Do you use that at all?
I haven't, but I use time blocking religiously, mm-hmm. and I have breaks built into my day. So it's mm-hmm. not like a 40 minutes on, you know, 10 minutes off or 30. I don't know what the exact ratios are, but I'm familiar with the Pomodoro technique.
Yeah, it's 25 and 5, and then 25 and 10, and then 25, yeah. and then a 15-minute break. And you do that, so you get 2 hours pretty quickly. But I, it's hard for me to focus. I can do 25 minutes, right? And yeah. And offer my 1,000% of what I'm trying to accomplish.
I can generally do an hour, I would say. Right. Pretty straight. There's some days where I have to focus for 8 hours straight, but they're yeah. hour long blocks of different yeah. meetings. Some days I'll have coaching calls for 8 hours. And I find what I struggle with is not the human to human interaction. Like I can go on a podcast like this or do a coaching call, no problem, and be very present. It's more about the administrative tasks or creation. So, What I recommend, what's really helped me for, do you have a lot of ADHD folks who listen to the podcast?
Yeah. And almost all the people that are interviewing are most of them have ADHD. Some have been autistic, but we all have a lot of the same challenges.
Yeah. So what I can share is the system that works for me. And I don't know if this is just audio or if there's any video to accompany it.
Yeah, we're going to do at least some video shorts. This may be the first show that's fully video, though.
Okay, so I can give you a link. I'll send that to you afterwards. So, I'll tell you one thing that works really well. As I'm talking, I just said, I'm going to give you the link. So the ADHD brain's going super fast and there's a lot of ideas. And for me, I mean, I can give you no less than 20 tools that have worked, but I'll try to simplify it down to like under five to keep it digestible for this audience. But the first tool is something that I'm holding in my hand right now. Right. And I literally just wrote down, send Sandy link to the 12-week year. So I'm going to send you this scorecard. Now, I modified this scorecard, which was built from a system called the 12-week year.
Okay.
And the idea behind the 12-week year, there's a lot of ideas behind it, but the simple idea is to get more done in 12 weeks than others do in a year by being very laser focused on one goal for the next 12 weeks. So my goal for the next 12 weeks is to sell out my coaching program. And in that 12 weeks, I have a series of kind of themes of how I'm going to sell it out. And within that 12 weeks, each week, you can see, well, I'm on week four right now.
Right.
Each week at the beginning of the week, what I do is I write down. So we're recording this Monday morning, right, and I already have 12 things written down that I want to get done. And here's the key is each of these has a rank, specifically a rank. So I write down kind of like a to-do list, all the things I want to do at the beginning of the week, and then I rank and I prioritize those things. So the act of you just, I'm going to send you this scorecard. I'm going to send it to you blank so you can get it to your audience in whatever format, because it's really valuable. I took this from the 12-week year and I modified it. They didn't have a ranking. I put a ranking on this. Mm-hmm. And that ranking system, basically, the way I like to explain this, I heard it from one of my mentors and friends, a guy named Frank Perkins, who recently spoke at my mastermind for my coaching program. He said, you have two brains. One is the higher brain, the upper brain, the brain that tells you what you should be doing and knows what you need to do. And then there's the lower brain, which is the brain that wants to pursue immediate gratification and distraction and is like prone to like in the moment, you know, pleasure, if you will. Yep. And the higher brain is the one that sets these goals. So at the beginning of the week, I take 15 minutes or so just to sit down. So this podcast, we didn't start on time,
right,
because of some confusion. But during that time, I immediately was just ranking, prioritizing, and starting to work on my 12-week year. I'm like, great, I know what to do. It's not like, oh, what do I do? I have this extra time. I'm going to go to LinkedIn. It was like, great, I know exactly what to do. So having that structure around prioritize, writing everything down you want to do at the beginning of the week, ranking it. Now it's my upper brain telling my lower brain, hey, here's what you need to do during the week. So now during the week, I have my marching orders, right? Without that marching orders, it's very difficult for the ADHD brain to be able to know what to do and what to prioritize. And, you know, we have all these windows open and we go from task to task. But this system, it's so simple, but it's the most powerful thing that I've ever witnessed in, you know, 44 years of my life of personal development because of its simplicity. The act of simply knowing where you want to go, writing down what you need to do and prioritizing it for the whole entire week now gives me structure. So at the beginning of each day, I can block off my day, any white space, any blank spots in the calendar. I'm literally doing what's called task blocking, going in order of the ranking and putting in, you know, number one. So number 1A was really simple. I had an update on my computer. I needed to restart it. I was getting this stuff. So that's already done. I restarted it during, you know, the time we were waiting for
that. That's a big
1B is my quarterly tax. I'm sorry?
I just said that actually, that software update is one that takes a lot of time and it can throw you for a loop. It's thrown me for a loop before. So it's nice to get that out of the way right away, you know?
Yeah, I got out of the way first because everything else depends on it. So it doesn't slow down the computer. So then the 1B is another thing I didn't want to do, but it needs to get done. It's some tax stuff. Right. So I'm updating for my accountant some tax reconciliation. Again, normally I'd put that thing off, but because I'm in the habit of doing the harder things first, the whole prioritization is about prioritizing the things that are actually most important first. So you get those out of the way early in the day and early in the week. So the system is, write down what you want, rank in order of importance, and then at the beginning of each workday, time block your calendar in the order of the ranking. So it's basically like very rarely do I get through a full week and do 100% of everything on here.
Right.
But I can promise you the white space is the killer on calendars. When you don't have clear marching orders of where to spend your time, you can go in a million directions. And for the ADHD brain, that's not, you can't,
you know, for ADHD brain, right? Because if I'm busy, I stay out of trouble. If I got time to think, then that's when things start going south on me.
That's exactly right. And you're going to think, and you're not going to focus. You're not going to execute. You're not going to do the right thing. So for me, I just take thinking out of the equation. My thinking is the planning. Blocking off time at the beginning of each week to plan what I'm doing makes it so I don't have what's called decision fatigue for the rest of the week, which is, what am I going to do? Where am I going to start? Where am I going to focus? You get overwhelmed. Yeah, so I don't feel overwhelmed.
That happens because maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe I should be doing that. And then it just doesn't work out.
But you don't have that. I don't have that issue because I already know what I should and shouldn't be doing because I took the time to prioritize, to rank, and to write it down. And so you're going to get this scorecard right after this. You will get it today. I promise you. You will get this today. And the reason you will get it is because you are now a 1C. 1B is before you, taxes, and then 1C, actually I'll make you 1B because it's so quick and easy to send you this scorecard so you can send it to your audience because it's so valuable. I want to get it out to you. But my point is simple. I rinse and repeat this every single week. So the act of planning and prioritizing what you're going to do and time blocking on your calendar is something that ADHD people, and not even ADHD, no people typically do on a regular basis. But for the ADHD brain, it is so essential. And once I started doing that, combined with other practices that I have to help, it really does make it easier to get through the day because I'm not thinking about what to do or where I should spend my time or getting overwhelmed. It's all laid out in front of me. And it's just a matter of executing on what my higher brain told my lower brain I needed to do.
Right. Well, you know, I think it was President Lincoln that said, if I have to cut down a tree, I'm going to spend the first, and I've got 3 hours to do it. I'm going to spend the first two sharpening my axe and the last third to do the job. And it seems like it's sharpening the axe, the process to line everything up the way that you want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like when I first started doing this, here's the cool thing about the system is, again, at the bottom, there's a scorecard and you could score how you compare it. So if you had 20 things on here and you only did 10, you scored 50%. Right. My goal is to get up above 85% every week.
Right.
And for anyone who's executed or used this system, and there's a book that accompanies it. It's called The 12-Week Year. But for anyone who's used this system, I'm sorry?
Who wrote the book? Was it, you said it was Frank?
No. Frank Perkins is a different guy. The 12-Week Year, there were two authors for it. It's Brian Moran, Moran, and Michael Lennington. They wrote it together. I recommend it to all my clients. In fact, in my mastermind, I bought a copy of the book to everyone and distributed because it's such an impactful book in my life. And honestly, it does. It lets me get more done in 12 weeks than others do in a year. It really does work well for me. But there's some other things. So planning is not enough. I think energy management for ADHD brain is really key too. So for me, I track my sleep. I have a Oura Ring and I make sure I'm sleeping at least seven hours a night so that I can be focused and alert. And then I exercise. Cardiovascular is really, really important for an ADHD person because it gives you a gradual dopamine release throughout the day. I also take cold showers after I exercise. So I do all these things to kind of biohack.
Do you do any sauna at all or just cold?
Just cold. I don't have a sauna. I'd like to get a sauna in my place, but I just don't have one now. I love the sauna. If there is a sauna, I just don't have one.
So some of my best thoughts come either walking or in the sauna.
For me, it's the same for running. When I'm running, I get all my ideas flowing. So that's a big one too, is I feel like for ADHD brain, you have to have dopamine. It's like we're craving dopamine. We're craving, our brain is going so fast. So for me, having that gradual dopamine release that comes from cardiovascular work, whether it's on the bike or on the, I'll train 5 days a week and I've run two marathons.
You just did a marathon recently.
Yeah, I did the LA marathon recently. And it's like that act of training in the morning, man, it just sets the whole day in an even temperature in my brain after.
I do a lot. I was a certified kettlebell instructor, so I do a lot of swings, and I'll do them between my blocks too, just because they take the edge off, and I can get a lot of work done in little blocks over the day. And you put that volume in without beating yourself up. And I'm 61, so I can't beat myself up, or I'll just kill myself. But I want to be.
You look great. Optimal. You look like you're in really good shape.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it's hereditary. My dad played in the NFL. And he was the one that taught me. He was definitely ADHD. He's passed now, but he was running back for the Raiders and the Colts and the Redskins, and he was a very good punt returner. But he was a guy that would say, okay, I'm going to do this, and then he would reverse engineer his way into almost anything. And he decided he was going to be a triathlete when he was like 50, I guess. I went and. I was his support team in Kona. He won his age group, and he hadn't done it for that long, but he just knew how to train for what the goal was. So you can apply those for physical, for things you want to accomplish physically, mentally, and professionally, I think, spiritually. I mean, there's ways to reverse engineer your way into almost anything. And I think that probably the way you're doing that is a form of reverse engineering.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, that's what I did for my marathon. I went back and did a 4-month training plan and just followed exactly what I needed to do and ran it. And I think it was 4:34 for my first marathon. The second one I was injured, so it was a little slower. But
I mean, you were hurt.
Well, the second one I was hurt. My first one, I was actually in pretty peak shape. And my goal is to run another one. I'm taking a little break for a while, but I want to get back next year.
It's hard to break too sometimes when you've been so focused on those. You feel like you're, at least I feel like I'm being lazy sometimes, but you need to do that though.
You have to, just to maintain your edge. I mean,
right.
Part of this is a spiritual practice too. It's like you're, I don't know. I think fundamentally for me, because my brain's going so fast, I always want to get a lot done and I beat myself up because I don't get stuff done. But when you're in a place where you're doing all you can and you're working a full day on the right things, like you have a lot of grace that comes with that. I genuinely don't beat myself up anymore like I used to.
Well, I mean, because I talk to myself in ways that I would never let someone else talk to me. Some of the self-talk is terrible.
Yeah.
And you give yourself grace, and it's not that you ease up, but you realize that you're human, and that some days you're going to accomplish everything that you want to, and other days something's going to come up. We do our best. I try to focus on what I can manage and let some of the other stuff go, because I think people tend to focus too much on what they can't control, no matter what they do, and not nearly enough on what they can control. And I've read a lot of the more modern takes on Stoicism. And I think that if you focus on how you handle what's happening in your life instead of and your attitude and how you handle things that are challenges, right? Because life's a challenge. But if you focus on what you I guess the best way to put it is I try to focus on not what happened, but how I deal with what happened.
Yeah. No, I'm a big fan of Stoicism as well. It's like, what's the gift? What's the gift in this? Right. I've been sick for a week. I went to a pretty intensive men's retreat and we were doing some boxing and fighting and got a couple ribs cracked. And the past week has been really hard because I've had cracked ribs and I've been really sick. So I'm sneezing. And every time I sneeze, my rib just intense, sharp pain, and I'm coughing, and it's just like a double dose of hell.
Right.
And I'm just like, what's the gift? And honestly, I feel a little better today. I feel at least my ribs still hurt, but I'm feeling less sick. And I'm just so grateful to just feel
grateful.
Normal.
Grateful. That, so you bring up a great point. And then I know you got to go, so we're going to close with this. 5 years ago, I made the really not very smart decision to decide to play 7-on-7 rugby. I'd never played rugby before, but I played football in college. And I'm playing with guys way younger than me. And we're playing on real hard tack. I mean, we could have been playing on concrete, right? And I hurt my knee. And I was feeling sorry for myself. And I probably had no business being out there with these guys. But I always have a gratitude practice. And each day I start my day with three things I'm grateful for. And that was the day that I realized that I could create gratitude from almost any situation or experience, because what my gratitude statement was that day is I'm grateful and happy that I hurt my knee playing rugby yesterday, because it proves I'm still alive and I can feel pain. It's not ideal, but it still gets the point across that life is to be grateful for. You know, we've got so many things that we should be grateful for. And sometimes they're not things that on the surface look like they ought to be. And once I made that determination, a lot of things changed.
I really like that, because I've been feeling pain all week, like my ribs. I was sitting in bed this morning and just breathing. And I wouldn't say crazy, but I practice meditation. Right. I try to every day. And the thing about meditation that I love is just self-awareness, just leaving your own head and just observing what your body's doing. So as I was breathing last night in bed, I was meditating, taking these deep breaths. Must have been 4 or 5 a.m. I woke up and it was in this pain. I'm like, let me just observe it. And I'm taking these deep breaths and observing with every inhale the pain in my chest. And I was like, man, this really, I can really feel this. And I observed it. And then I fell back asleep. But I love the gift in that is that I am alive. Like, to be able to observe this means that I'm alive. Yep. And that's beautiful, man. That's what the point was. I didn't just get boxing injured. They had us actually cover up and get nailed for about 15 seconds with the purpose of showing that we're going to be alive when we come out, face your pain, go in it. And that was the whole point, is to say, look, you're alive. You got to face the pain sometimes. And yep. I think that was the whole point. And this is just the lingering effect of it.
Right.
But I like that perspective, because I hadn't thought of it that way, but it's really, it's true. It's like just to be grateful for the pain, because it shows you're human. That's how I felt in my darkest times, is like I was grateful because these emotions are so real and raw. And if you can find gratitude in injury, that's really mental toughness in its purest form.
We make it through and we're successful. And sometimes I think we forget that.
We forget what?
That we're successful. That we've made it through every day so far in your life. So you've been successful every step of the way. Doesn't always feel that way. And I think we need to remember that sometimes.
I agree. So. I agree. I think that's probably a good place to stop. Yep. So I'm going to
LinkedIn. Best place to find you?
LinkedIn is good. If you want coaching, go to untapyoursalespotential.com. I coach one-on-one. I coach group. I have a mastermind group with salespeople specifically trying to get from good to great, teach a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about in detail. So that's untapyoursalespotential.com. I also have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/IanKoniak. I put free videos and training every single week. So those are the places to find
you. You're consistent. That's
I try to be
part of it, you know? So, well, listen, thank you so much, Ian. Let those ribs heal up, but always be grateful for the pain.
I just coughed and I feel it. I'm grateful for it. Thank you, Sandy.
Awesome. Thank you. Take care, all right?
Take care.
Yep. Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the NeuroDivergent Selling Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and found value in the insights shared by our incredible guest, Ian Koniak. If you'd like to learn more about managing your neurodivergency and enhancing your selling skills, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review on your favorite platform. Your support means the world to us. For more resources, tips, and tools, visit our website at neurodivergentselling.com. Until next time, remember that your unique neurodivergency strengths can lead to incredible success. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.